every time I encounter a Julia Roberts movie, I always think of this one line from Parks and Rec where someone's talking about Julia Roberts and Nick Offerman goes, "Wait, is that the toothy girl from Mystic Pizza?" And that's what always comes to my mind.
Toothy?
Is that the toothy girl?
Have you ever seen Mystic Pizza?
I have not seen Mystic Pizza.
Neither have I.
No.
Okay.
I don't know what, I don't even know what it's about. I have no clue.
I
guess a magic pizza that grants wishes. I don't know.
That grants wishes. Please, Mystic Pizza, help me be less toothy and help me get out of Georgia.
I can do one of the two. I can't do both. I'm a Mystic Pizza, not a miracle order.
Could for sure do one of those things. It sounds like a tall order.
That's right.
I don't want to overpromise. I'm merely a pizza.
What do you want from me?
I don't even have thumbs. Dustin.
Hello, Uber.
Are you ready to leave the world behind?
Sure.
Oh, okay.
I hate people.
Yeah, that was certainly an interesting line from this movie. Let's go ahead and get into it. Why not? Let's talk about Leave the World Behind.
I went online this morning and I rented us a beautiful house out by the beach. I figured if I made the reservation and packed our bags, it would eliminate most of the reasons to say no.
Oh, this is nice. Kids look so happy.
The Wi-Fi isn't working. Get a pad.
I'm so sorry to bother you, but this is our house.
This is your house?
Driving back to the city, then something happened.
You want to stay here, but we're staying here.
We need to get them out of here.
I need to think everything's gonna be okay.
Everything is gonna be okay, isn't it?
We are seeing ongoing cyber attacks across the country.
Something is happening, and I don't trust them.
Everything I know, I have told you.
I don't believe you.
I would do anything to protect my family. What you do is your business.
Get in the car right now!
Haven't you been picking up on what's going on out there?
Whatever it is, it's happening to all of us.
No, no, no.
I just want to know, what is the truth?
Okay, so Leave the World Behind. It was a movie that it's on Netflix. I didn't know much about this at all. The only, I think I probably saw the banner heading for it or something opening Netflix, but I just sort of was like, okay, it's another Netflix movie. Like, they're always putting these out. Like, I just. The thing about Netflix is I see that they put out a new movie and I'm like, oh, I'm not going to watch that. Like,
yeah,
the odds are I'm not going to enjoy it.
Sure.
That's probably going to say something about their programming, at least to me. But then someone referred to it. Someone made a casual comment about how that movie somewhat makes the case for analog stuff. And I was like, well, that's kind of cool. And that one observation, which is a small part of the film, was enough to where I was like, I'm down with that message. I'll watch this. And like my, I did the old man thing. I was like, I'm pretty sure I'll be agreeing with whatever this movie has to say. And like, it doesn't matter who's in it, who the filmmaker is, nothing. It was just like, they're going to tell me it's good that I buy DVDs.
Yes.
And that's why I watched this film on Netflix. So Leave the World Behind is written and directed by Sam Esmail. It's based on a book, same title, by Rumman Alam. And it is produced by and starring Julia Roberts. And we've also got Mahershala Ali, Ethan Hawke. Oh, how do you say this woman's name? Mahala?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And Kevin Bacon.
It's also produced by the Obamas.
That is also true.
Don't leave
and,
them out.
And a point. It wasn't on Wikipedia. Why is that? Who wrote this?
I don't know.
Tea Party.
Just remove.
Was this Wikipedia or WikiLeaks? Come on now. All right. I'm here till Thursday, everybody.
All right.
All right. So in Leave the World Behind, we've got a family from Brooklyn. We've got Clay and Amanda Sanford, and then their kids, Archie and Rose. And Amanda decides, we're going to go on a vacation. I booked a place. We're going to get there today. Let's go. Come on. And they go, and it's up in, where is this? Like the Hamptons? Where is it? Hold on a second. I'm confused about. They're in Brooklyn. And so I think it's like right across from the city, isn't it? Is that the Hamptons?
Yeah, it's pretty close.
You can tell we're not from New York.
I don't know where it is. I
should have asked someone. Anyway.
It's a place where there's trees, yeah, but there's also a city close.
I'm pretty sure.
And there's a beach.
Yeah. I think it's in the Hamptons.
Okay.
Someone correct me if the Hamptons aren't that close to the city. Anyway. So, so they go, and while they're there, something happens. Something knocks out internet and cell service, right?
Yeah.
They've got electricity, but TVs, apps, nothing's working. So it's like, okay. And eventually the two people show up at the door who claim to be the owners of the house, and they're like, we fled the city because there's a lot of like violence happening and we want to stay here. Also, let's try and figure out what's going on. And the movie is basically like a thriller with that premise. You're kind of meant to like question Mahershala Ali and his daughter as soon as they show up. And you're also trying to figure out what is going on, what caused this. Yep. And the animals are doing strange things. And so that's the plot of the movie. I really liked this. I thought immediately that the filmmaking was great. I really loved the cinematography. I was like, what's Sam Esmail? Like, what's he known for? Mr. Robot, which was like an acclaimed show stylistically. And I was like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. The camera's doing crazy things. We've got a whole lot of like cool tracking shots. We've got some spinny, you know, camera on crane stuff happening, and on, it's making use of the space. It's cool. It was not standard coverage. It was actual creative coverage at times.
Yep.
And I was really engaged by these performances. Everyone's great. Mostly everybody. The kids are okay. All the A-listers here, Ethan Hawke, Julie Roberts, Mahershala Ali, they're all great. And and they really sold me the tension of both being a human in this situation and being a human in this house around these people specifically. I don't know. Yeah. I like it. And I think people should watch it. I think that it's entertaining. And I also think it's one of those makes you think the whole time. I remember I was reminded of when you and I reviewed Greenland. I went back and I was like, when did we talk about that on the show? We did talk about it on the show during the pandemic, in 2020. For a similar reason that I liked Greenland. Greenland was about, you know, a planet killing event happening and societal collapse. And, you know, it was a lot more direct of like military and people with guns and stuff happening and, you know, a race to a location before an apocalyptic event happens. And so, you know, but the same kind of thing of like, oh my God, like imagine if this were to happen, it's depicting something scary, actually scary to people, not a horror movie about spirits or whatever. It's like, oh my God, what if our phones didn't work? And so it's different from Greenland in that it's a lot more, it's slower, more deliberate. There's a lot more withholding of information, and a lot more deliberate filmmaking. So it's not as entertaining as Greenland, but still it will scratch that itch of, if you want to be shown a like a what if situation, then I think people will enjoy Leave the World Behind. And that's my, if you haven't seen it, take on it. So I'll say more in spoilers, but what about you?
Yeah. I gave it 3.5 stars. I mean, I think it's a good movie. And, the way that I would, how I would couch this, if somebody's like, do you recommend I watch this, is yes, if you like slower, more deliberate films that, honestly play out a little more theatrically. Like, this is almost a stage play in a weird way, because it's kind of in mostly one location.
Small
cast. There's a lot of just conversation between people. And there's not even a lot of like getting up and moving. It's just kind of like, you know, there's a couple of long sequences where Julia Roberts and Mahershala Ali are just like sitting at a table, or they're up like kind of dancing or whatever. There's where Mahershala Ali's daughter and Ethan Hawke are outside just by the pool and they're just hanging out. And it's like, these are slow, deliberate scenes that I think if you have a taste for that, if you feel like that's your jam, then you'll really like this. If you are easily bored, then I think maybe this might not be for you, because it is long. It's 2.5 hours, and it is it's just slower, right? Like it earns the bigger moments, and in a way that a lot of other films don't. Like, a lot of other films, it's very formulaic. Like, every 10 pages, you've got to have some big set piece. You know, that's what like Bird Box was, right? Also on Netflix. And this is not that. This is a little more methodical in its approach to how this goes. And then to compare it to, you know, something like Greenland or, you know, any of these other like end of the world type movies, it avoids a lot of the typical tropes, which would be, you know, the military and like, you know, being quarantined or like shoved into big groups with other people and trying to be seen by the military and like, pick us, you know, or,
being forced to murder somebody.
All these like things that are just like synonymous with this, you know, Humvees passing by quickly.
The problem is everything that goes that way runs the risk of just repeating War of the Worlds.
Yes.
Which came out almost 20 years ago and is a great movie still. But everything that, even with Greenland, I was like, it's better not turn into War of the Worlds, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I think it's just, I think it does that deliberately. Like, it deliberately avoids all of this. And I think that it's scarier for it. It's not that the film is necessarily scary, but it definitely makes you think in a way the others don't. Like, the others are like, oh man, what if I was there? And like, you know, I have to get my family seen for medical treatment by the military. Or it's like this, where you don't know anything. Yeah. You know that something's up. I don't really know what. All I have is the word of the man sitting across from me and what he thinks is going on. Maybe he's in the know, maybe he's not.
Right.
I have the TV, which just says emergency. That's all I have. I don't have my apps. I don't have my, you know, I have nothing. To me, that's a little bit of a scarier situation to not know what's going on, to know that something's happening. I just don't know what. And we could try to go home. We could try to get to the city, but what's there?
Yeah.
There's no, I mean, is aliens? Is
all it, we know is that we're safe here right now.
Right now.
Yeah.
We know we're safe here right now. We don't know if in the city there are aliens or an occupation from a foreign country. We don't know what is going on.
Yeah.
You know, is there an outbreak? Is there some sort of weird, like, it could be anything. Yeah. And you have to think about all these things. And so I think that that's an interesting approach to it. And I think, you know, more rewarding because of it. There's a few things that I think prevent this from being great to me. And we can get more into those in spoilers, but here in the non-spoiler section, I'll just say the film feels a little incomplete to me. And I think that depending on your taste for, I don't want to say incomplete movies, but your taste for movies that kind of leave you guessing.
Yeah.
You may or may not enjoy this. It also, I think, sets up a really good premise that it then proceeds to ignore. It casts it aside too early. And I think that thematically it would have been better to have not. And we can talk more about that later, but I think that there's some issues there. And I think that some of the dialogue feels a little stilted, and maybe it's theatrical in its nature. But some of it feels a little stilted, and I don't know if this is purposeful, but like the first lines of the movie almost immediately took me out. The first lines of the film are Julia Roberts packing, and she's saying something to the effect of like, Ethan Hawke wakes up and he's like, "What are you doing?" And she's like, "I'm packing."
All the exposition.
It's literally like, I just figured that we would never go unless I went ahead and bought them. Also, remember the budget cuts that you've been facing at work? Well, I figure that's probably been stressing you out. And so I figure it's probably better if we go. And also for me at my work, and it's just like a lot of like, just a dump. Like she even, well, because of the budget cuts. And I'm like, you don't talk to your spouse that way. Like, you know why they're stressed.
Yeah.
You don't have to remind them, "Hey, remember you're stressed because that one person at work punched you yesterday."
I just want to remind you again how close you are to getting fired at your job in case you forgot.
I'm just gonna slide this in here really quick. You might be fired any day now. So I figured you needed a vacation. Yeah. Hey, you know what? You're about to get fired. So why not just slack off?
Yeah.
Don't go to work and make yourself useful.
Don't bother. They're gonna fire you anyway.
They're gonna fire you either way. It doesn't matter. So there's a lot of like, you know, that kind of dialogue in the movie, and you know, some of it's a little more, I don't know, like flowery than I think that these people would necessarily speak. I think that, there's just a few things like that, that kind of take me out, but for the most part, I'll say like, I'm in awe of the cinematography and the direction, visually.
Music too.
Yeah, the music's great. The use of music, it started and I thought, this is almost like a parody of like an A24 trailer or like a Blumhouse trailer maybe.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that, you know, kind of like Jordan Peele.
Yeah.
Bloop, bloop. And so I'm like, picking
violins.
Yeah. And it's like, okay. But then it like, it settles. And it's like, oh no, it kind of earns this, like that idea.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's really cool. Like the cinematography is great. Visually it's great. I noticed a couple times the sound mixing was weird for me, but I think that, you know, the score was great. And the performances are mostly great. Like you said, I mean, it's hard to knock Julia Roberts, Ethan Hawke, Mahershala Ali in this film.
Yeah.
Even if some of the others are a little weaker or just weaker at times. And, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good movie. And again, do I recommend it? Yes. But you know, your taste will vary, and I could totally see recommending this to somebody and then coming back to me and saying, "Yeah, I couldn't make it through. I couldn't make it past an hour." And it's like, yeah, I get it. I understand. But I do think it is worth your time if you have the time. And I never was disengaged from it. I was never like, "Oh, come on." I was just like, you know, okay, like you probably could speed this up a little bit. But never in a way that I thought detracted.
I really wish that we, like, it made financial sense for us to have merchandise for this show, because I would sell hoodies or t-shirts with like your, you know, basic face silhouette. Mm. And it would just say the words, "Your mileage may vary."
Your mileage may vary.
And it's just, Cause it's like, it's like a, it's like every single episode you say it and it's so true. It's like, it's one of those very basic tenets of criticism. It's like, hey, like it just depends on your time. That's the weirdest thing about listening to critics. It's like, hey, we talked about this before, but like your tastes may differ from my tastes. And the whole point of listening to me is, do you agree with me normally? Well then listen to me. Oh, do you usually have an opposite, you know, where do you fall in relation to my opinion? You know,
well, and I think what I like to try to do is say, like, if you like this, then you'll like this. If you don't like that, you're going to have a hard time with it. And so like, let's be fair about it. Like when it's the same thing, if you approach any piece of art or like even a good meal, like there are just going to be things that you like or you don't.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think it's worth noting that these are not failures. Like the film isn't a bad movie because I don't like this thing about it. A film is bad when its intentions are unclear, or the filmmaker's intent is betrayed by their own filmmaking. And that's what makes a movie bad. Not just like, there's not enough action in this movie. that doesn't make it bad. That just means it's not your taste.
Yeah.
That's like saying the sweet tea isn't sweet enough. Well, it's sweet enough for somebody, just not you.
You cut back on your sugar.
Cut back on your sugar.
There's
your
a lot daddy. Of sugar in there. There's a lot of sugar in here.
Hey, what are you doing?
Hey.
What do you think this is?
I'll never cut back on my sweet tea. For my name isn't James Edward. Here. So,
J-E-B.
Jeb. Call me Jeb. I have to go by Jeb these days. My last name is not popular.
It raises an eyebrow or two.
Quite a few monocles fall out when that eyebrow gets raised.
Why, there goes J-E-B.
There goes Jeb.
Jeb.
Jeb and his whole, there's Jeb the second, Jeb the third, Shirley Jeb, and the baby Jeb.
Baby Jeb.
Let's get into spoilers. Let's talk about spoilers for this movie. So it's basically told to us, although it's in the description on Netflix, so it's not, you know. But there's like a quick flash of CNN when the TV works for a brief second. And it's like, hey, it was a cyber attack. It still is good that they didn't say, obviously they don't know who did it. And again, what I really liked that the movie does is it forces you, it gives you enough of an answer so that you know the nature of this emergency cyber attack. Okay. That's why have electricity, but we don't have satellites. Yep. So we don't have nav systems working and, you know, everything that, you know, we have water and power. Like it's not the
power.
And
it immediately gets your brain out of alien zombie mode. It's like,
right. It's like, okay, cyber attack. So now what they of course bring up, and if you, you know, think for half a second about it, is that doesn't mean the cyber attack didn't come from it within the country. It could have been anonymous. It could have been, you know, any number of hacker groups in the United States. It could be, you know, an uprising from within, from, you know, angry people. It could be China, Russia, Korea, all of them, Iran, all these, you know, someone says like, hey, we made a lot of enemies, you know?
Yep.
And they slowly feed us, not even clues, but they, you know, those pieces, you know, the flyer drop. And then the story about the flyer, Kevin Bacon's story about how the flyer drops in the West Coast are not in Arabic. They're in, they're in Mandarin.
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh, great. Like, so it either was all of them or it was someone who doesn't want us to know who did this. And then the movie ends and it's not clear what exactly, is meant to happen next. I know that the director had opinions about it, which the film supports to me. He says, I think they make it. it seems to be sort of setting up that everyone's probably going to go to the bunker. You know, her bike is right there. Mahershala Ali is like, we should go to the bunker. And then once they get back to the, once the women get back to the house and realize that everyone's gone, they'll be like, hey, we should go to the bunker. And so, there's a lot of interesting things in this movie. Oh, that's my medicine reminder. I'm an old man, Dustin. I have to remember set an alarm, take my meds.
Do you have your Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday?
No, I don't do that yet. I used to have one of those and I was like, I'm only taking one medication. What am I doing? And now it's like, I take three at night. It's like, I'll take them when I get up. I hope.
You hope you'll take them or you hope you'll get up?
I hope I'll get up. I hope I'm not trapped in this chair forever. In this track suit.
Yes.
Can you even see this? I'm like, am I just a black mass?
You're just a big black blob. I'm like a
floating head.
Yeah.
Every time I wear black, I say to my daughter, like, I feel like I'm about to present the iPhone for the first time.
I thought you were going to make a Walk the Line reference.
No.
You look like you're going to a funeral. Maybe I am.
Maybe I am.
Maybe I am.
Why not?
Why not?
Why not?
Why not?
You answer me, June. Answer me right now. There's a lot of fun things to talk about with this movie. So I don't know where you want to go with it first, but I'll just spout off a few things. I like that Friends is the show that the daughter is obsessed with finishing.
Yeah.
Because that's sort of ultimately one of the messages of the movie is,
I'll be there for you.
When things are like uncertain, it's better to stick together and be friends and not turn on each other.
And I'm like, y'all did that for the theme song at the end.
Right.
Yeah, so no I was one like, told you life was going to be this way. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, I got you.
They were very careful not to show that it was probably Max that she was watching that on because this is Netflix. We need to design an interface for a neutral streaming service.
Yes, exactly.
We can't make it Netflix, but we can't. Although there was Netflix on the remote that they used. You motherfuckers.
Yep. You had to do it once.
You had to do it.
I'm surprised they didn't say like, this isn't Friends. They need to be watching Orange is the New Black. Like, come on. Like, Stranger Things.
They get House of Cards. Well, maybe not House of Cards.
No.
Would have been so scary if Kevin Spacey had showed up. This is my house. Oh no.
Oh no.
Disgraced actor Kevin Spacey is here.
I love that they announce him like they do the celebrities on the Scooby-Doo show. Yeah.
It's television's Carol Burnett.
It's basketball sensation, the Harlem Globetrotters.
Disgraced actor and terrifying human being now, Kevin Spacey. Yeah, he does those Christmas addresses.
No, I didn't know that, I'll send you. Okay.
Oh, we're on a tangent. Lord. He every year now for a while, he'll send out like a video, like talking in a creepy Southern accent, sort of like his character, but he's not. So he's talking like Frank Underwood.
But he can't play Frank
Underwood. But he's not Frank Underwood.
He doesn't own that.
And so it's
right,
like, and then he says weird things. And he was like making allusions to like death and stuff. And then like two of his accusers like ended up dead or something crazy. And then he was like, later acquitted of something. It was weird. So like this year he went on like Tucker Carlson's, whatever the hell that guy's thing is now on not Twitter. And, and was on that and in character, like talking, and it was unclear about what he was even talking about. And it's like, what's going on? It's so bizarre. Anyway, for anyone listening, if you'd like to know what the hell I'm talking about, just Google Kevin Spacey Christmas address and
I don't understand.
And sleep tight.
Is he stuck in character?
I have no fucking idea what he is up to right now.
That is crazy.
And I'm a little scared.
is he getting paid for this? Is he just doing it?
I don't know. There's so many, much like the characters in this film, I have no clue what or why it's happening, and I'm scared.
Name any celebrity who's like famous for a long-running television show, and then put yourself in their shoes. Like, like Bryan Cranston is going to play Walter White every Christmas for no money.
Yeah.
Just to make people happy. Hello. That's so sad.
This is Fraser Crane. Still.
I'm still. Well, no, that's still going.
So well, that's true. That's a plug. That is happening, isn't it?
That is happening. Yep.
What was I saying? Friends, I thought that it was really cool that, that the whole movie hinges on us not trusting Mahershala Ali and his daughter because Julia Roberts doesn't, but that all just turned out to be racial prejudice.
So I wanted to talk about this. So to me, one of the most interesting aspects of the film is this idea that the owners of the house come back home while you are on vacation.
Right.
And putting yourself in those shoes. And what's great is that they present this in a are they not way that really is unsettling because they seem to know where the dishes are.
Yeah.
But then you also have like these moments where
he grabs the keys
out of his pocket and it's like, okay, well, he has the keys, but then he can't find the right key.
He doesn't have his wallet with him.
He doesn't have his wallet with him.
Yeah.
His wife is conveniently out of town. Yeah. Like all of these things.
He says weird things like, guess I should have listened to my wife and learned what these keys were. And I was like, what? Seriously?
That doesn't seem right.
Come on, man. That's a suspicious thing to say.
Right. And then he opens the drawer and there's a gun there.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, hold up now.
Right.
And so like they're sowing these seeds of distrust. So it's like we are conditioned to not trust him. And I think this is the point. Like, I think the filmmaker's saying, look how distrusting you are in this situation.
Yep.
Like, and then the point of the whole thing is that maybe we need to trust each other and band together rather than, you know, splinter and fragment into small groups or whatever. And if that's what they're trying to say, well, that's fine. But I think that it betrays the idea because I feel like by the time the second act rolls around, they're kind of settling into, oh, these guys are okay.
Yeah.
Right. Like Julia Roberts even says, I didn't like you at first, but I'm starting to like you. And so like, and then they of course have their like flirty dance or whatever upstairs.
Right.
And so it's like, okay, all of a sudden we now are supposed to trust him, but the audience have seen all of the signs that sowed already in us the distrust. We know there's a gun. We know all of this is, you know, probably going to unravel at some point. All signs are pointing to a betrayal. Mm-hmm. And yet we're being told, no, they're okay. And then that never really comes back into play. Like there's not a point in the climax where Mahershala Ali might betray them. Like you think he might actually do it.
Right.
It might be that way if he takes Ethan Hawke and his son to be seen by this contractor prepper guy. And then it turns out that like, instead of them being on each side with Ethan Hawke in the middle, what if Mahershala Ali goes and joins the other side, right? And he goes and stands next to Kevin Bacon and now it's a coup. Yep. And it's like, okay.
And they're cannibals.
They're cannibal buddies. Yeah. Yeah. Canna Buddies, new on Fox.
On Disney.
On Disney, Canna Buddies.
They're creepy from head to toe. What a delicious ensemble.
Jake and his family just moved to Southern California.
Watch out.
Whoa. Because the next door neighbor is a cannibal.
Ooh.
Oh.
Pardon me, neighbor, do you have any sugar and feet?
Canna Buddies, all new next Thursday night at 7.
New time on Fridays. It's not doing well.
Friday night at midnight, just for your parents.
Just in time for you to go to bed after you were, you know, drunk from dinner.
Disney, After Hours.
After Hours. In between reruns of American Dad and American Dad 2.
There's a sequel. But yeah, man. So like, I feel
Fox
like
made it them created American Dad 2 so they wouldn't have to syndicate American Dad 1 and pay
that's,
money.
That's exactly what it was.
Why don't you just start over at 99 episodes? How about you just start again?
Every 99, you have to restart.
Make us more money.
I can't believe that show's still going.
They're about to make American Dad 3.
Oh, wow. Good for them. Good for them. Yeah, man. It's just so weird. Like, it feels like a better premise to have that be continued throughout the distrust, this idea of can we trust him? And then I think that better suits the theme, which is like, hey, we need to stick together. And the idea being like, up till now, I don't know if I can trust you. And the only way I know that I can trust you is because you proved yourself to me during the climax. Maybe that's more conventional, but I think it tells a better story because it allows that conflict to happen throughout. Because really, when you think about it, there's not a lot of conflict once they settle in to sure. their roles. There's a lot of like talking,
yeah.
but there's not a lot of conflict. And had they always been suspicious of him and her, and us, the audience, had we always been suspicious of them as well, I think that conflict and that heightened sense of tension would just stay. And then of course, like you can toy with the idea of like the son getting sick, and maybe there's something you can toy with, like maybe Mahershala Ali is responsible for it, but like, we don't know. Like, but as it is, we really don't know. Was it the bug bite or the noise? We don't really know. And so, but both of those things seem kind of inconsequential. Whereas had they been tied to a person or potentially a person, that might have been more interesting. Like, you know, imagine Mahershala Ali's daughter, Ruth, I think was her name. Imagine Ruth gives him something to drink, right? And then yeah. and then he gets sick, right? Now we're starting to, you know. And so I don't know. I think there are different ways to handle it. And I'm not going to necessarily knock the movie because they didn't do what I wanted them to do. But I do think that is a stronger, to me, I would have responded more strongly to that premise.
I didn't trust them for most of the movie, even when narratively we start to trust them.
Yeah.
And I think I was being led in the right direction, which was at first you're supposed to be suspicious. Yeah. Like that is kind of weird. And then they explain themselves. Yeah. And then Julia Roberts kind of like, she says something like, this is your house. And I was like, oh, she's kind of racist.
Yeah.
And so then you go, well, I don't want to be racist. She's probably wrong. And yeah. so then like you see her perspective, but you're like,
yeah.
okay, it is weird, but maybe it's not weird. Then after a while, it's like, okay, this is clearly their house. But even then for me, I was like, but is it? Like,
yeah.
and when
yeah.
movies do that, I go, hold on, I'm still skeptical. I know what you're doing, movie. You're trying to lull me into a false sense of security. And I start like intellectually battling the film. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm just going to remain on guard. And yeah. so for me, part of what keeps the tension for the whole time of the movie is not only do we not know what we know what happened, but we don't know who did it. We don't know what they should do. We don't know what they can do. We don't know what's up with the animals yeah. and we still don't quite know conclusively yeah. if the homeowners are on the level. Like when yeah. she's outside, when she's, you know, smoking weed with Ethan Hawke and talking to him, yeah. I kept thinking like, cause what keeps me watching their performances is I'm keep thinking like, are they telling the truth? I'm asking the whole yeah. time, are they telling the truth? Like, yeah. okay, maybe it is their house, but maybe there's still some weird intention. Yeah. And it's kind of brilliant because like the movie just comes back around to like, no, this is all fine. They're acting normal. They are wealthy black people mm-hmm. who are just trying to get into their own house
yeah.
and feel a little bit more afraid of the prejudices of these white people who are questioning their you know, status, basically.
Sure.
There's even, you know, Julia Roberts says something like, there's no family pictures around the house. And Ethan Hawke's like, maybe they take them down, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. And she goes into that room and there's all their stuff. There's pictures and like other pretty much any sign that the movies that the house is owned by Black people is tucked away in a room, which is its own statement in itself. It's sort of like an explainer, you know, putting them in the basement, you know, that galls her, especially like, mm-hmm. what are we going to do? Like do their laundry, you know?
Yeah.
It's really interesting. So in a way you go like, oh yeah, it's essential that the homeowners are Black because there's a whole dynamic. There's a whole statement for that, but it creates this dynamic with prejudice. And of course, Ethan Hawke, as someone who is very device dependent and he's a media studies professor. So he's very like, he's so trusting because his wife is so prejudiced. He's got to balance her out a little bit.
Sure.
But also because like, oh yeah, you know, like, you know, the world is frictionless. So when there is no media to study, he discovers and admits that he is fairly useless.
Yeah.
And I just thought that it was fun that this movie had something to say through each character. Yeah. Mahershala Ali is the insider on the financial side. You know, Julia Roberts is the skeptic when it comes to the people. She's the cynic. Ethan Hawke's too trusting, too dependent on modern conveniences. He doesn't have to be useful. And the kids, you know, you've got the daughter who is, who cares about people, but she cares about characters. Mm-hmm. But she, I mean, they're typical kids in that like, oh, they want their technology to work. But she's very isolated and alone because no one takes her seriously, including her brother. And all he seems to be focused on is, being noticed or, you know, being noticed by girls or whatever. Like, and it's just, even when this crisis is happening, he can't be really bothered to, you know, internalize it at all. Because it's not really affecting him right this second. You know?
Yeah, sure. And it's interesting, like what the film says with each character, I think is important and is one of the saving graces of the film.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that the film ends where it does because narratively the story's not over. And I think that's what lends to my feeling of like incompleteness. But the point with each character had been made.
Yeah.
So it's like, do you get out when the character work is done or do you get out when the narrative is done?
Yeah.
And they chose to get out when the character work is done. Now, I don't resonate with that as well because here's what it sets up. It sets up, okay, I'll be back in 1 hour. Set your timer. I'll be back in 1 hour. And they never are reunited.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that seems now to be a waste of time to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's setting something up. It's what would happen, but narratively it's not resolved. Rosie's gone. Let's see if we can find her. Narratively unresolved.
Mm-hmm.
My son is sick. Let's get him some medicine. Let's hope it works. Narratively unresolved.
Mm-hmm.
What happened? Like, what is the nature of the threat that we're facing and what's going to happen next? Narratively unresolved.
Mm-hmm.
Who is anybody going to continue living at this home? Are Mahershala Ali and his daughter going to kick them out? Are they going to kick them out? Are they like, what's going to happen? Are they going to go to the bunker? Narratively unresolved. There's a lot of narrative that is left hanging. And I think for me, that feels inherently dissatisfying. So to me, like I'm on board but then the first misstep was, I feel like you're asking me to trust Mahershala Ali and it's way more interesting of a movie when I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And then for me, now you're leaving me hanging with a lot of empty story threads. And to me, even if the thematic point has been made, the story is not complete. Like if I'm telling you a story, just like colloquially about something that happened to me today. And the point, there's a twofold point. One, to tell you what happened when I was in line at the grocery store. And two, to tell you how it made me feel. I can tell you how it made me feel, but then if I stop the story, it's not done, right? Because I haven't told you what happened. And so to me, you wouldn't tell a story like that in your everyday life. And so to me, that's dissatisfying. I immediately, when the film was over, I look up, is there a sequel? Like, what is this, part one? Like, cause this is not done.
Yeah.
And I, yes, the character arcs are complete, but the story isn't done. And I can't think of another time, and maybe this is a good thing, maybe it's a bad thing. I can't think of another film that bothers to tell a story where the character arc is complete before the narrative is complete. And yet this one does. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's a bad thing, but I think they could have tacked on another half hour to this thing, wrapped it up in a more satisfying way, even if the character work had been done. Or you just rework it a little bit so that the character work takes another half hour. And I think you end up with a more satisfying film. The question is, would you end up with a film that's worth talking about as much? And that's the trade-off.
Yeah. I think my first thought would have been like showing them all getting to the bunker and then just making it.
Yeah.
Would have been unsatisfying for me because then you're just playing out a possible ending.
Yeah.
But what would probably be better to keep the effect of all that would be to, you know, we smash the credits or whatever, we do the directed, written, produced, you know, we do like 10, 15 seconds of, oh shit, it's over. And then we come out of credits and yeah. we do like, I don't know, 2 weeks later or something, you know? They're in the bunker. And it's just them. It's just our main characters, with Mahershala Ali and his daughter in the bunker. And it's not, you know, they're not all good or anything. They're not like, but, then you show something, like you show that Archie's okay. Or at least he's not dead.
Yeah.
And then maybe there's like a knock at the door or something.
Sure.
And then that's it. Then you end it that way. There's still ambiguity. Okay. Someone now knows there's a bunker here, but are they friendlies? Are they antagonists? Does it matter? Are they going to answer the door? Whatever. Mm-hmm. You at least do show like, yes, they went to the bunker. Archie's alive. Yeah. They've got supplies and there seems to be no new problem in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Maybe they can even see television somehow, or they're listening to some pirate radio station or something. Because they got that fancy computer that has all the whatever's in it, you know, and there's that.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what you do, you know,
or here's an idea. It comes back. They're in the bunker. It's Mahershala Ali. He's like lighting a candle at the table and Julia Roberts is across from him and it's romantic lighting. Mm. It's just the two of them. And then the daughter walks in, sits next, like her daughter comes and sits next to Mahershala Ali, and his daughter comes and sits next to Julia Roberts. No Archie, no Ethan Hawke, cut to credits. And then it's like, oh, wow, things happened. And like, okay, what happened? Now we have something to talk about. Or Ethan Hawke is like in a cage in the background. Help!
Help! He's in a cage. They're cooking him on a spit. Like the camera pans over. Friends is on the TV. Everyone's eating popcorn. And then you just go over to like the fireplace. And it's just, he's already dead. He's on a spit with an apple in his mouth. Oh.
Yeah. It's Ray Liotta in Hannibal. His skull's open.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like doing something that would be like, oh, what is this? Like, I don't understand. Like, oh, is Ethan Hawke and Archie dead? Or is Archie dead and Ethan Hawke's gone? Or like, what's going on? Like, give us some questions, like something to, but yeah, I mean, either way.
Ooh.
Yeah, go ahead.
You have the knock at the door of the bunker.
Mm.
And it's the people, it's supposedly the people whose house it is. Hey, we're the whoever's, whatever their name was. And you bring it back around. Like,
that's a good one.
Is this really your house? Is this your bunker? You know, like,
that's a good one.
Do you let them in? You know, you have Julia Roberts look at Mahershala Ali. He just has a look like, I don't know. And you cut to black. There you go.
It's the exact same thing. They open the door. Yep. It's two people standing there framed exactly the same way.
They look on that security camera or something. Like, they don't open it, but they go. I seem to have lost my keys to this bunker and my identification.
Yep. There's your rewrite. That's it, man. That's how you do it.
Nice.
That's it.
Woo.
Nailed it.
We did it.
Nailed it. Eventually the Hoopercast movie hour will get to a better ending or a better.
We're going to rewrite all these movies and re-release them.
Yes.
And we'll do a little puppet theater with them. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Well,
sweet.
That's Leave the World Behind.
Yeah.
Great. Okay.
Let's leave this review behind.
Well, yeah. Let's leave the audience behind now. let's cut out in the middle of this sentence.
Oh, another good thing about the film. So I guess you're saying, would I recommend Leave the World Behind? Well, the answer.
I think the resounding answer would be,